Welcome back to the second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only.
Good morning, and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with your host, Pete Talbot, along with Dr. Samara Humat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you an opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here's your host of Leading Edge Medicine, Pete Talbot.
Hey, hour number two. And really, as a little reminder, actually, this is hour number four.
Yep.
I've been sitting in this chair, haven't moved an inch for 3 hours now. And you're up and
dancing. Are you complaining?
And, no, I dare not complain. I know who writes my checks. Not complaining.
We keep telling you to stand up.
That's right. Hey, if you want to know where we are for all 4 hours every Saturday morning.
He's right there in that chair.
I'm right here in this chair.
From 8 to 10,
we're on another station. So we're not going to promote that station now, but we will tell you if you want to start listening earlier, you can do that by going to our website, lmclinic.com, and push the podcast button at the top of the page. And it will do a drop down and it'll show you where we are for all 4 hours every Saturday morning, all 4 hours. And even better, when you hear something that is really good and meaningful for you, or maybe meaningful for a friend, a relative, a spouse, a parent, a coworker, that kind of a thing, you know, they would want to hear what you hear here, then you can also go to a library of all of our previous shows, hour by hour. They're all listed out there. So if you hear something in the next hour, or maybe you just heard something, and you think, oh, man, my Uncle Bill really needs to hear that. Well, just have him go to lmclinic.com, push the podcast button, and by Monday, probably Monday afternoon, it will be there, and he can listen to it. Hour number one on 570 KVI. That's how it works. Okay? Okay. All right. Let us take another call. Let's get right into the calls. Brad has been waiting the longest. Brad from Seattle. Thanks for holding, Brad.
Hello, Brad.
Hey, good morning or afternoon by now. I don't know. I have my father who is 97, and up until 2 years ago, he was doing really well. I mean, for his age, he was out and about, all his faculties, and really no issues. And he got shingles, and attacked his nervous system. He lost part of the, the movement in his right leg, and he's been lightheaded. And so I know you can't diagnose it, but is there any where you can maybe give us an idea where to start looking for what may be causing the lightheadedness?
Okay, I would start with a good neurologist. You know, he needs a nerve specialist, and that's what neurologists are. He needs somebody to take a look at all of his neurologic tree, starting with his cranial nerves and his face and so on, and working his way down. It's rare to get motor weakness with shingles. It is almost always the sensory nerves. It's a rash that shows up on one side of the body or the other, and it's usually intensely painful to the touch. I mean, even air blowing on it can cause pain. And that usually improves over time, but sometimes will be a long-term or even lifelong discomfort, which is why we are big boosters of the shingle shot around here. but to lose motor, to have weakness on one side, or to have dizziness, that tells me there's something deeper than the cutaneous layers involved. So I'd really, really like to get a neurologist to get in, probably do some MRIs, do a really first-rate exam, look for focal weakness anywhere to see what else may be going on. You know, 96-year-olds who become sedentary don't do well at all. They go downhill in a hurry if they're not able to get up and move and keep things functioning. So,
right. You know,
so get him into a neurologist right away, get him worked up, and see what we can do to get him moving. Samara, do you have anything in addition to that?
No, that's a great idea, Jerry. And my only question was going to be, have you recently started him on any new medications?
Not recently. He's had a few changes to medications, but he's on quite a few of them. And I looked online. Of course, I looked up the side effects, and a lot of the side effects of these medications are dizziness and
yeah.
lightheadedness. And so that's kind of yeah. where I was going to start.
Yeah. Well, as people get older, they need less dose of for the same function because their body's mm-hmm. ability to metabolize drugs is compromised. And so drug interaction and dosing of drugs is the number one cause of side effects. And so I'd start there too. I'd start to see, okay, well, what has been added recently and in relationship to his symptoms, and maybe start weaning that off a little bit, lowering the dose in conjunction with the provider that started it, and see if you get any success there.
In which case, I'd let me modify my recommendation then to two doctors.
Yeah.
You know, a gerontologist, someone
Perfect.
Who specializes in elderly pharmacology.
Yeah.
Because there are doctors, okay. and that is their specialty,
yeah.
is how do we need to modify medications as people get older?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so a gerontologist to look at his medications, and then a neurologist to see if we can figure out where that weakness is coming from.
Yeah, you know, they say that if you make it to 95, then 95 to 100 is easier than 90 to 95 for whatever reason. I don't know if it's true, but for whatever reason, given that, and given that he was doing well till 95, I think this is a great suggestion, and I would start with gerontology myself. They are much better at dosing and choosing medications for the elderly.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you so much. We appreciate that.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you, Brad. Let us go to Lewis in Bellingham. Lewis, we're glad you called in.
All right. Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I used to live in Everett back in 2015, and I did use the clinic, and I'm using Relief Factor ever since then. I live in Linden now, Linden, Washington, and I can't say enough about the great support for joints and whatnot I get from the Relief Factor product. But to my topic, I called because the COVID-19 virus has got me concerned because, mm-hmm. as you know, many people think that it might have been engineered in a laboratory in Wuhan, China. And mm-hmm. so I was calling to find out what you thought the probability was that, in fact, it was an engineered type of virus that somehow got loose either accidentally or intentionally, and if it was intentional, it would have been part of the policy of the Chinese Communist Party to economically defeat the United States and the West. So that's the gist of my question.
Okay.
What is the probability, do you think, that could be actually what's going on here?
I think the probability that it came out of a laboratory in Wuhan is extremely high. I'd put that 90%+. Was it engineered or was it an accidental escape due to sloppy procedures, you know, where one of their workers got contaminated and took it out of the lab, which is, you know, a distinct possibility. You know, the reason I think that it came out of a lab in Wuhan, and the reason that the Chinese Communist government will not permit anybody to come in and investigate, you know, they absolutely forbid. They allowed some people from the World Health Organization that they control to come to China, but nobody was allowed to go to the labs, which is, you know. The coronavirus, the novel coronavirus, is endemic in an animal called the intermediate horseshoe bat.
And with that, just real quickly, whatever you're doing in the background there, Lewis, is driving us a bit nuts. So
we're getting this loud snapping, popping noise.
Thank you.
So the intermediate horseshoe bat is the only real vector for this particular organism. And its primary range is in India and northern portions of Vietnam and southern areas of China. Wuhan is up fairly close to Beijing, and it's about 800 miles from the northern extent of that bat. It's not a food bat. It's not a, I mean, we hear about, you know, bat soup and stuff, if people were joking. Chinese, you have to remember, under the communist regime, 60 million people starved to death in China. And as a consequence, they learned to eat everything. Okay, and this was not a cultural aberration. It was simply a matter of survival under socialism. And so, but the intermediate horseshoe bat is a very small animal. It's not a good food source. So nobody in that wet market in Wuhan was selling the bat. It was not in that market. However, both of the level four laboratories, the viral labs that are owned by the Chinese Communist Party in Wuhan, there's one within a few blocks of the market. There's one about 2 miles away. Both of those used the intermediate horseshoe bat as part of their viral studies. And they did study this virus. Were they looking at it as a potential bioweapon or not? Who knows? You know, these are Chinese Communist Party laboratories. They do what the party tells them to do, and nobody else knows what anybody tells them to do. But given the range, I would say almost certainly it came out of one of those labs. Now, how and why? Two very different theories. One, of course, is they took a virus that was especially not very aggressive on an Asian population and was very heavily aggressive against the Caucasian, Hispanic, and Black population. We know from the pattern of infections around the world, Asian countries, even though they do not socially distance and did not shut down their economies, Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam, Indonesia, Singapore, South Korea, none of these people had the overwhelming infections that Europe and the United States and South America have had. So for some reason, even though they never shut down their economies, even though they do not socially distance, even though they do wear masks and have always worn masks, I was in Asia back in the 70s, and people were wearing masks if they thought they had a cold. Mm. And so, you know, masks have been part of the culture. But their subways are and have been open. The buses are packed. The trains are filled. The restaurants are open. The businesses are booming. And their infections are tiny, tiny, tiny compared to Europe and the United States. So, you know, the virus clearly has a propensity for non-Asian population. Is that luck or is that engineered? I have no way of knowing and have no way of finding out. You know, what is, is. We are stuck with a virus that is virulent. It is 50% more dangerous to our Black population than to our, you know, Caucasian population. Since much of Central and South America is a genetic mix between Black and Caucasian, it is intermediate between the two in the Hispanics. So Hispanics are higher risk than Caucasians, Blacks are higher risk than Hispanics, and Asians are the lowest risk on the planet.
Wow.
I can't tell you why. I can just tell you what is. All right?
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And, of course, if Joe Biden does become president, we can be sure that much of what's going on in China won't become known.
You don't call him China Joe and Beijing Biden for no good reason. Okay?
Really? I didn't know
that. All right.
So there you go.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Lewis. Hey, let's go to a break. That was interesting. I appreciate your view on that. I agree. When we come back, we've got someone, Gail from Renton, wants to know about eggs. How many eggs are good, bad, or indifferent? A lot of people want to know that because there's still a whole lot of people who believe eggs are really bad, Jerry, for your cholesterol.
Oh, well, I eat them every morning.
Let's talk about it when we come back.
I fly for a living, and I'm changing time zones and all this other stuff and getting colds. And when I get a cold, I can't fly. I thought, well, let's give this a shot. I started taking the supplements, and I noticed less colds. So I'm just working, you know. So then I thought, well, let's try the rest of it. But for us, it's big improvement, and that's why we stay with it.
You know, Jerry, the last little testimonial we heard, you know, coming back from the break, really hit me in the sense that people have taken a long time to get to the condition they're in right now.
Absolutely.
And yes, they come to longevity, and we often get asked, well, how long will it take? How long will it take before I'm feeling better? Mm. And that's hard to answer, isn't it?
Define better.
Better. Well, better is better.
But
he pointed out that he found improvement in one area, and then it took a little longer for improvement in another area. But
which is why I said define better.
Yeah.
What are you looking for?
Yeah.
You know, males generally are easier and faster to give a subjective improvement than women. You know, females are just they're more complex, and we are dealing with more difficulty in balancing the brain chemistry than we are with men.
So men are easier.
Simpler.
Most women would say men are easy.
Yeah. But when you said more women are complex, I said throughout America, people are saying amen to that.
Yes, every man is. Well,
I say that with love.
You've heard my story about how sex came to be?
I'm not sure I want to hear it. My finger is on the button.
All right. Okay, let me explain to you how sex came to be. In the great before.
Can the children stay
They can
in the
hear.
Room?
They can always stay in the room, yes. In the great before, God was bored. He said, the universe is too simple. It needs a little excitement. So I'm going to create two radically different creatures. I'll call them man and woman. Now, they are not going to think alike. They are not going to feel alike. They are not going to experience themselves or the universe around them in even remotely similar ways. They are going to be so different, they'll never really understand each other. And then I'm going to fix it so they can't exist without each other.
There you go.
And so he made man and woman.
I'm bringing up this last little testimonial because, you know, it may have taken, if you're listening to us right now, it may have taken you 10, 20, 30 years to get to this boat that you're sailing in right now. And you're not that happy about it. It's windy. A lot of waves. You're not happy about the aging process. And so we can't promise you to come to longevity and boom, you're going to be better overnight. But what is consistent, it's amazing when people see a difference. It might take a week, it might take a month or 2 months, but when they start seeing the difference, holy cow, just the hope, just those indications of improvement are so encouraging.
Yeah, the problem is with men, we start with a very high testosterone level. Now, I'd point out women, testosterone is also their base hormone. Okay, even a woman in her peak reproductive years has twice as much testosterone as estrogen in her system.
I bet you most people don't know
that. They don't know that. No, men and women both. Testosterone is our primary sex hormone for both men and women. It's just that women have a lot more estrogen than men, but even women have twice as much testosterone as estrogen in their system.
Wow, that's amazing.
With men, we have very little estrogen. We have some, but tiny fraction of what women have. But when our testosterone declines, depression and fatigue and lethargy and a lack of enthusiasm and drive and ambition all go away. There are a lot of papers published on depression in men correlating with low testosterone and the fact that simply raising that testosterone resolves depression in an enormous percentage of men. So when you take a man who's running a free testosterone of 45 or 50, and you kick that free testosterone up to a healthy mid-range of 150 to 180, you go from 45 to 175, all of a sudden he's swaggering down the street, and he's saying, me and Rambo, we're the manly men. I can do this. Drive, ambition, self-confidence returns very quickly in men. Okay. With women, we've got, by menopause, estradiol has dropped by 50%. Progesterone has dropped by 75%. Testosterone has dropped from up in the range of 75 to 80 nanograms per deciliter down to around 12%. So we've got to get them all back up, okay? We've got to raise that testosterone. We've got to raise that estradiol. We've got to raise that progesterone. And then we have to look at the precursor hormones that also have impact on the brain, the pregnenolone, the dehydroepiandrosterone, okay? We have to look at their melatonin for their sleep at night. We look at their inflammation. We have all this stuff to balance in a woman in order to get their brain functioning properly. They have more complex brain function than men do. Okay? Their circuitry is run differently than ours. They have more long fibers that connect the left to the right side of the brain. Their emotional and cognitive centers in the brain are more closely linked to each other than men. We are more silos. We separate emotional and cognition to a much greater degree than women do. Okay. So, but that's a simpler system. They integrate their systems. And so you can't just fix one part of it. So, yeah, women are more complex than men. And fixing their mood, their desire, their ambitions, their sexuality is a much tougher job than it is for the average guy.
But happily, it's at least what we do at Longevity.
It is what we do. And this woman standing here next to me is very good at what she does.
You know, a lot of times it's the patients that respond so beautifully. And to me, it's basically just physiology, Jerry. You replace the hormones that are dwindling in Paleolithic time when life expectancy was 30 years. These things didn't matter. Now, when we're asking that everybody to live much longer, 1700 years, we just don't want life. We want quality in those years. So you have to go back to say, okay, what was physiology like when you were younger? And you have to replace that physiology and make it healthy for them. And all of a sudden, people say, oh my gosh, I can do things that I couldn't do as those hormones were dwindling. And now you add a good nutritional base to it, you add some supplements, you talk about diet and lifestyle issues, you control their inflammation markers,
exercise,
you look at their visceral fat levels. Now all of a sudden the picture has changed. But it didn't happen overnight, as we're saying. It takes time. And because we're all unique and we've all come from different paths, paths and different things have happened to us in our lives, we all need different interventions. Somebody may have had a lot of stress and their cortisol levels would need more attention than somebody else who's, you know, just low but not had extra stress in life. So those things play a role, and we have to understand that and help you figure those out before we can show you results. And one other thing I'll say is that sometimes when you start feeling better, you forget how you actually felt.
Yes.
When you were that bad, you know?
Human beings are incredibly able to justify how I feel now is normal.
Yeah.
And we do that on the downside, you know, as your limits and your capacities decline and you're able to do less and less, you accept your new normal.
Yes.
On a progressive way. You know, when you were a kid, maybe running 5 miles was normal.
Yeah.
You know, at 50, running 1 mile might be your norm.
Oh,
and
yeah.
At 70, walking that mile
right.
might be your new norm.
Right.
You know, but if we increase your capacity,
yeah.
And I call it the edge effect.
Yeah.
And I have seen the edge effect more often in men than in women. Once more, my observation, women tend to be more sensible than we men do. But if you take a guy who's used to a high level of function and
yeah.
he's now not doing well, and you raise his function, he will very quickly go right back to the edge of what he can do and be dissatisfied and want more.
Yeah.
And if you give him that extra, in a very short period of time, he'll be saying, well, this is fine, but I want more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So men tend to keep pushing to the edge.
Uh-huh.
Women have a more nuanced and balanced view of themselves and the world around them.
Right.
Generally, it is more complex to get them there. But when you do get them there, they recognize better than we guys do.
Yes.
That they are in a better place.
They are. And they will lean in and talk to me about issues that they had never, ever brought up with me as being a problem in our dialogue before. You know, simple things like, we're having sex more frequently. I'm actually enjoying this. Or I just slept so much better. And more often than not, I'm not tired anymore. You know, so soft and subtle things, but they enhance quality of life.
They do.
And again, you've just described what we do at Longevity Medical Clinic. It's just put as simple as that. That's what we do. We take a look at the whole person and try to balance things out. This is why, quite frankly, we do the free health analysis appointments. There's my biggest concern in this topic, listening to the two of you, is what you mentioned, Jerry. People develop what I call a fatalistic attitude.
Yeah.
They just think, okay, they're 67. Well, my brother's 68, and he's a mess, and he's getting older. I'm getting older. And
everybody I know is having the same problem.
And such an important point, genetics. They kind of, you know, use that as a guise, as you know,
yeah.
Well, I'm fated. It's my fate. But my goodness, I have patients who come from terrible family histories, but they do not have those issues.
And dementia is a good illustration.
Yes.
Well, my mom and dad or my grandpa had dementia, and I guess there's nothing I can do about it. When that's not
true.
Yes,
there is something you can do about it.
That's right.
Yes.
That is a lie.
Yeah.
There are things you can do. I've heard you say, Jerry, you can lower your risk.
By about 80%. Yeah.
Did you hear that?
It's not dropping
yes.
it to zero. There is still risk.
Right. Yeah.
But you can lower your risk of getting dementia by 8%. Excuse me.
80%.
80%.
Yeah. So if you had a 50-50 chance of getting dementia, let's say you are epsilon, you know, 4-4.
Yeah.
And which statistically gives you about a 50% chance of being demented by 60. We can lower that risk to about 10%.
That is just unbelievable. Folks, I hope you heard that. Please, please. That's just one sliver of the pie.
Yeah.
Talking about dementia. Talking about building your core, building in balance and energy and enthusiasm for life. Oh, my gosh. Do not have that fatalistic. Just say, absolutely no, I'm not going to fall for that crap. And if you would like a free health analysis appointment, that's why we do them. We will do two free tests, a blood test and our special in-body, amazing in-body testing. And those two tests will help determine what some of your basic health risks are. For you to make a decision, the reason we do that, we want you, obviously, as a patient at Longevity. That's a no-brainer. Obviously, we do. But you need some information so that you can make an intelligent decision as to whether you should become a patient. So we do that for you and then give you other easy steps to take down that path. So if you would like one of our free health analysis appointments, that's a smart thing. Sit there and say, no, I'm not going to have that fatalistic attitude. I'm going to make an appointment, see what we learn. And through the end of the year, we're giving you $100 of free longevity supplements just for coming in to your appointment. So talk about a no-brainer. Wow, my golly. Go to lmclinic.com, lmclinic.com, and schedule your own appointment. It's very easy to do. We've got multiple appointments now available at all three of our longevity medical clinics, Tacoma, Linwood, and Kirkland. Select the clinic that's best for you. Make your free appointment. I promise you, the information alone, you will leave, whether you become a patient or not, you will leave with information that will be very beneficial to you. LMClinic.com. Now, I promise, within 10 seconds of coming back from this break, we're going to talk about eggs. And maybe cholesterol. Are they really dangerous? Are egg yolks? Do you really have to eat egg whites? Those crummy, nasty, stinking egg whites.
Well, they don't stink, but
yeah. Oh, they do.
They're tasteless.
Oh, they're meaningless. Oh, my gosh. We'll be back.
I went to the Linwood office, and I must tell you, your staff is so amazing. At Longevity, they talk to you. They make you understand what's going on, and they give you the numbers so you have a starting point. And that's what I love about coming to you guys.
Get out of your chairs. Come on. Come on.
Jump.
You're sick. Yeah, there you go. You can do it. Good for you. On one leg, too. Very impressive. Good for you. See?
Here it comes. We got to get back to the calls. I could take another couple of minutes of this. Sly and the Family Stone. They're still singing, by the way. They just haven't found Sly for about 20 years. He imbibed a little.
As sly as he used to be.
All right, folks. Welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. Let us go to Gail in Renton. Gail, welcome to the show, and thanks for waiting so long. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Yes, we moved into a retirement home September 15th, and every morning, my husband, who turned 80 last Wednesday, eats two eggs in various forms. That's 14 per week. And I tell him he's digging in early grave. What do you think?
Well, my comment is that 80, that's not an early grave.
Yeah, well, that's true.
But okay. I'm curious. Jerry, go ahead.
Unless we do the lab work, unless we see what his lipid levels are, and even better at that level, it would be nice to do something, you know, like the heart clinic assessment that we were looking at.
Yes, the inflammation markers at the vascular level.
Yeah. You know, we can actually now measure the inflammatory markers that come from plaque in the arteries at different levels of development.
Yeah.
Early plaques, medium plaques, high-risk plaques. And by looking at his lipid levels, by looking at his inflammatory markers, by looking at the degree of oxidation and his omega-3 levels, we get a much better idea. You know, it's true, egg yolks do contain cholesterol.
Yeah.
But cholesterol is also the mother hormone.
That's right.
And we make all of our other hormones out of cholesterol. So we need it. We burn it. Some people metabolize it better than others.
Right.
You know, personally, I probably average a minimum of 3 eggs a day.
Wow.
Okay. My wife fixes me a breakfast sandwich. It's a French toast, the bread soaked in eggs, and then there's frequently a fried egg in the middle, along with the cheese.
Wow.
You know, and then some sliced banana, and then some whipped cream on top.
Oh, my goodness.
Goodness me.
Whipped cream without sugar, am I probably?
Yeah, it's just plain whipped cream. But I eat that breakfast, and then I go run 3 or 4 miles.
Yeah.
So
most of our listeners don't go run 3 or 4 miles.
Yeah. And so, you know, when I do a workout, I burn 600 or 700 calories in a typical workout.
Yeah.
And so I can eat a big, robust breakfast.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make me fat.
Sure.
And my lipids stay in a very nice place because I'm using those lipids and I'm burning them for fuel.
Right. Right. So what you've highlighted, Jerry, is very important is that activity level. So for your husband, we would have to, you know a little bit more about him, but also not all cholesterol is equal. It's not all, you know, the bad type of cholesterol that'll build plaque. It's labeled as total cholesterol. Then we look at triglycerides and then we look at the LDL particles. We can look at fractions of the LDL particles, ones that are at risk of laying down plaque and those that don't. And then we look at the HDL particles, which actually remove plaque burden. And those, if you have higher of those are actually protective. So it's a whole...
Excuse me. The one thing I didn't say is that his carotid artery is at least 70% blocked.
Oops. Yes. Changes the whole picture.
Okay, yeah.
All right.
So he's at a high risk for stroke then.
He is.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. So again, you know, you've just given us a whole new piece of information that is of critical importance. So he needs to do everything he can to open up those carotid arteries. Okay. And so for him, it's not a everyday diet. He needs a therapeutic diet. And the book I would recommend for him is by Dr. Dean Ornish. And Dr. Ornish has got a very, very aggressive diet that is extremely low in fats. It is extremely hard to stick with. But his diet has been shown to open up carotid arteries rather dramatically. He's taken people that had a 90% occlusion and gotten it down to a 50% occlusion over a course of about 18 months. Okay, without surgery or drugs, just with dietary change. So I'd say, you know, go hunt up Dr. Dean
Ornish.
What's
the name of the book, though?
Well, he's got two of them. The first one's called Eat More, Weigh Less. And the other one is called Reversing Heart Disease.
And then Spectrum.
Spectrum is his last one. You're right. Yeah. Which talks about
Dr. Dean Ornish.
Ornish. Yeah. And Dr. Ornish is a cardiologist who, specializes in this whole thing of reversing cardiovascular plaque.
Right.
And that's his field. He's very good at it. It's just. I went on his diet one time for 6 months.
Oh, that long?
Yeah. And I was living with a tiny little Japanese girl that fixed his kind of food for me. But it's a tough diet. It really is. I could not stay with it more than 6 months. But I'll tell you, I've never been leaner in my life than I was with that diet. I mean,
interesting.
I dropped my body fat down to about 10 or 11%.
Oh, my goodness.
So.
Yeah. I mean, you know, stay in touch with a good cardiologist and find out what the plan is. What are the goals for his cholesterol markers? Where does he need to be? And then try to figure out how you can get him there. And diet and lifestyle, along with medications, are very good options.
Absolutely. But yeah, I would not recommend my current diet for your husband.
That's right.
That would be a real no-no.
Would you repeat that? You would not recommend?
I would not recommend the diet that I'm currently eating for your husband, because with that 70% occlusion in his carotid arteries, he's at high risk of stroke.
Okay. Thank you.
And specifically with him eating a couple of eggs every day, is that dangerous?
Again, it depends on how he's metabolizing.
Exactly. We don't know, right?
Yeah, we have to do the test to look.
Yeah.
The fact that he has a 70% occlusion in his carotids worries me. So I'm going to guess he probably does not metabolize it well. But unless you measure, you don't know. So we need to do, you know, the metabolic studies to see what he's doing with those eggs.
So she should go, or he should go, to his cardiologist and ask specifically for what test?
Either the Boston Heart panel, or what's the other one?
Well, we do the LPP.
Yes, right.
But there are many others. Quest Diagnostics have their own panels. There are many others, but a fractionated lipid profile is what he would need.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else, Gail?
Cardiologist, and ask for a metabolic test.
You want a a panel that fractionates his lipids.
I think she's writing it down.
Yeah.
And there we go.
And if you want a brand, tell him something equivalent to the Boston Heart panel, the Boston Heart Study.
The Boston Heart panel
or study. Yeah.
Or and Cleveland Heart Clinic.
Cleveland Heart Clinic does another great one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Cleveland Clinic Heart Cardiac Panel or the Boston Clinic.
Yeah.
Either one of those.
Gail, what a wonderful question. And we love to see and hear your love for your husband. That's great. Okay, a quick break. And when we come back, Dee in Everett has a question about neuropathy. She's got some in her leg. Don't know what to do. We'll be right back.
I've been a longevity patient at the Tacoma Clinic a little over 3 months. So I've lost a bunch of weight, improved libido. I quit drinking wine, which was not easy. I really appreciate what you do.
Oh, well, I'm falling in love again.
Love again.
Oh, 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 oh. Many's the time I've been too tired. Many's the time I've been stung. Many a honey took all of my money, but that was when I was much younger. Made up my mind to be careful. Made up my mind to beware. I was all right until Saturday night. I'm in a gal with the golden stare. Oh, oh, well, I'm falling in love again. Oh, 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 oh.
Jimmy Rogers.
My compliments. Awesome music.
I love this one.
Yeah.
The woman that's got my heart happens to have burgundy hair currently, but...
Yes, your wife has burgundy hair. That's right, she does.
I've told you my Jimmy Rogers story, so I won't tell it again, but I love the guy. I love the guy. Never met him, but I sat in for him once. Okay, let us, we've got time. I think we can sneak in two more calls. Let's go to Dee in Everett. Dee, welcome.
Hi, Dr. Maxson.
Hello.
I've been having neuropathy. Hi. Neuropathy type symptoms for about 15 years, and the doctors can't seem to find the reason why. They've done like the nerve test on it, and I passed that, and then they did, I thought it was a vein, but some kind of a circulation test, and I passed that. And more recently, I went to the heart department, and they did another test, and they said the circulation was okay. But my legs... don't have a lot of feeling. I can feel pressure, but not like a sensation type feeling. Like if you run your fingers down your arm, you can feel nerves and stuff. I don't feel that. They feel like they have dead spots. And my feet feel like if I bend my toes or something, I feel like I'm bending wet sandbags. And there's some little bit of pain and tingling in my feet occasionally. And so that nobody seems to be able to figure out what's going on. And if I get in the shower and I get hot water on me, then my legs will turn kind of a purple color. And they're always cold. Even in 90-degree weather, my legs and feet feel like they're ice cold. They might not be ice cold, but they feel like they're ice cold.
Sure. Your subjective sensation is that they're cold. Is that right?
Yes. Okay. Ice cold.
Yes. And do these sensations, they're intermittent and they shift from place to place? You may have numbness here this month and over there the next month?
No, I don't seem to notice them shifting that much.
Okay.
And the cold is pretty constant. They're pretty much always feel cold.
All right. You know, when somebody tells me that this is on their arms and their legs and it's widespread it's in patches.
Yeah, no, it's not on my, it isn't on my arms. It's just my legs.
Just your legs?
My arms, like, yeah, just my legs and feet. I just said the arms, like, for the sensation, because I couldn't figure out how to describe it. If I run my fingers down my arm, I could feel little nerves tingling as I run my fingers. I don't get that on my legs. It's like the outside of the leg. The skin just feels dead, kind of. But I can feel pressure, but the skin feels dead. I don't get the those other kinds of signals.
Okay. Well, when you tell me about the purple, of course, my first thought is bad venous return.
Mm-hmm.
When you tell me about the cold, my first thought is arterial blood supply. But if you've had the, you know, the flow studies and they've actually looked at your Dopplers and so on and you've got good blood flow, then, you know, those concerns of mine apparently don't apply.
Yeah, I mean, in Raynaud's, you can get spasm of the arteries.
Sure.
And that's why you get the color discoloration, you know, from...
It's usually fingers and toes.
Yeah, and it's smokers.
Yeah, and it's not the whole leg.
It's not the whole leg, yes. That's what threw me.
Yeah. Now, Raynaud's will be small
vessels. It started down by my ankles, and then it just got that purplish color kind of crawled up my legs very slowly over the years. Until it passed my knees, and it's like just above my knees now.
Wow.
You know, there's lots of issues. It could be any connective tissue disorder, scleroderma, or lupus, or, you know, multiple issues. And I think
autoimmune disease.
It is the autoimmune, yeah.
So what should she do?
She needs to see a rheumatologist and get an autoimmune workup.
Yeah.
Basically, a blood panel that's looking at autoimmune triggers or...
And so they do a whole panel of antibody tests that, you know, that's so new, even I don't know some of the antibody tests they do. But based on your symptoms, they will choose a lot of autoimmune diseases and look for panels to kind of find out what's going on.
Right. Because the nerve conduction studies are apparently normal. The arteries are normal. Mm-hmm. You know... That limits our options.
Yeah.
And what this probably tells us is you've probably got some sort of autoimmune process going on.
And with that, we are glad you called, Dee, and I hope you do what they suggest.
Go to a rheumatologist. Yeah, that's our recommended.
Going on for 15 years,
yes.
too.
Yeah.
And with that, let's sneak in one more call real quickly to Michael in Lake Forest Park. Michael, welcome.
Hello, Michael.
Hi.
Oops. Michelle.
No, it's Michael. She was the first
Michael.
David in the Old Testament. Yeah,
M-I-C-H-A-L.
I'm going on 69, and I've had MS since I was in my 20s, and my main symptoms were optic neuritis, but, you know, this mother stuff. I'm doing well, but I've always wondered about the single shots. You mentioned that earlier today, because I had shingles when I was pregnant when I was 25.
My goodness!
And then I had it was around my rib cage, and then when I was 30, a few popped up on my head, and when I was 60, and I went back to massage school, I got a small bunch on the other side of my rib cage. So I've had it 3 times, so given that the body learns to fight things, do I need a single shot? The original one is only 50% effective anyway. So what's your opinion? I know you mentioned single shots earlier.
The newer Shingrix is better than 50% now. So, you know, we've got a newer version out. And I'd go ahead and do it just because, clearly, if you've had outbreaks in your 20s and 30s when your immune system should have handled this virus very well. So you've got an immune weakness, certainly a sensitivity to this particular virus. I think your body needs all the help it can get. So I'd go ahead and get the newer shingle shot.
Does she need special permission from a doctor? Because don't you have to be a certain age normally to get a shingles?
Well, for insurance to cover it, yes.
Oh, I see.
But she's now 69 years old, she's old enough. She covers.
Okay. Sorry.
No, if she were still in her 40s, that we might have trouble. But yeah. I don't think anybody will object.
No, of course not. So, Michael, I'm afraid we've got to go, but I hope that has helped. We're just out of time. 4 hours has flown by. But thank you for being with us today. Sure. This has been
And the
fun.
Dancing always helps.
Yeah. Yes, burn a few calories.
Some people go to a dance on Saturday night. We do it Saturday mornings.
And folks, right. If you've learned a few things, that's good news. Tell people about Leading Edge Medicine. But if you have decided you're not going to have that fatalistic attitude and just give up and fall apart like everybody else falls apart, you need a free health analysis appointment where we give you the two free tests, the blood test and the special in-body test. And we're still offering $100 of free longevity supplements with every free health analysis appointment. Make your appointment online at lmclinic.com. Easy to do, lmclinic.com. And have a good rest of your weekend. Oh, hey, you can also call 866-86-YOUNG.